Morning. Today's daf in Chulin's Kuf. We're inside the Testament Bays. We are Kates Misharin, and how are we Mishire? Okay, so after having gone through the discussion yesterday of how to be Mevatel Tam, how to negate the taste of a food, which is prohibited, using methods of Shishim and Mea, or Shishim or Mea, depending on which version of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi we're going to be following. That takes us all the way back to Tzadi Chesam and Aleph, and the Gemara discussed where the sources of this is coming from. Zorah B'Sheila took us from Tzadi Ches into Tzadi Tes. Yesterday we quoted a number of Mishnayos from Masechta Arla, and we quoted a Mishnah from Truma as well, that discusses the amount that's needed in order to be Mevato, in order to negate the taste. And again, the Gemara just kept vacillating and bouncing between either I need 60 times the amount or 100 times the amount. Regardless, the Gemara then at the very end pointed out that sometimes taste is even stronger. Sometimes you can have an extraordinarily pungent taste, and that's going to impart a taste, even at something greater than shishim or mea. So the Gemara gives an example of tzir, the brine that comes off of a fish, where there the ratio is going to be significantly more. With that stated, we're continuing the Gemara Ketz Misharin, and how am I Mishar? How do I know if taste actually went through? So again, I know we spent the last 2 days talking about using ratios, but if you go back to the Mishnah had another method in terms of establishing whether or not taste imparted, and that is we're going to substitute. We're going to take the two foods. Of course, we can't taste the two foods because one of them is usser, and that isser taste may have imparted into the other food. So we're going to take two other foods, and we're going to use the same ratio, and we're going to combine those two other foods, and then we're going to see whether or not in our mock in our test drive, whether or not one taste is going to impart into another. Now, if you look back at the mission was very specific about what should be taken as those two other foods, kibasa belefes. So the Mishnah told us that we're going to take meat and we're going to take turnip and we're going to cook them together, again, using the same ratios as the gid was cooked together with the thigh of the animal, and see if whether or not taste is imparted. So Gemara over here makes a very detailed point, Ketz Misharina, Namar Avuna, Kebasa Barasha Liftos. In terms of which part of the lefes, so make sure to use the head of the lettuce, the head of the turnip, and not the base of it. And what's the difference? If you take a look at Rashi, so Rashi writes Barasha Liftos, Yerik Shal Lefes. We're talking about the leaf of the lefes. Velini Rashi Rosh Lefes Matok Miznavo. Vitama baser nikar biznavos alafis bishir muat ava barasha liftos in a nikar ela bishir gamur. So Rashi says over here this actually works to our betterment, not to our detriment, because Rashi says that as far as the base of the lefis is concerned, it's very bland, it doesn't have much flavor, and you can put a little bit of meat, cook it together with that, and it's going to impart and infuse the taste into it. Masha Einkein, if we're talking about the leafy parts, says Rashi, so that has a significant taste in of itself. And so therefore, it will not be so easily affected and influenced by the meat that's cooked with it. And so, okay, anyway, that's that's Rashi in terms of the subtle difference between using the root of the lefes versus using the leaf of the lefes. In the meantime, let's continue on the Gemara. The Gemara now takes us to a basic machlokas. Now, I've been promising this machlokas for a long time. Since the beginning of the perek, I told you this machlokas was coming up. Well, the beginning of the perek, admittedly, was some time ago. It takes us all the way back to Samech. Wow. Sorry, not that far back. It takes us back to Pei Testament Base, where we started the seventh parak of the Masechta. And I told you, it's a classic machlokus, and whether or not the Gid has Tam or does not have Tam. And meanwhile, it's been now over 10 blot of Gemara, right, from Pei Testament Base to where we are right now on Tzadi Testament Base. So, exactly 10 blot of Gemara, but finally the Gemara here presents the machlokus. I'm Rav Huna, right, one line further. Masisin Deloki Aitana, Detanya. Our mission is not going like the following Tana, because we learned in a Brisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer Ein Begin Menosin Tam. So the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, is that the Gid does not have taste. And that means to say is as follows. Now, again, I know this was hard to explain 10 days ago, and it's going to be hard to explain now as well, but the basic idea is as follows. The gid and usher is the sciatic nerve. Okay, it's not the muscle. It's not a piece of meat. Right, it's not delicious. Right, no one's going to get excited about sitting down and eating the sciatic nerve. Isser or no isser, it's just something that does not have that much taste to it. That we can all agree to. What is subject to the machlokus over here is as follows. The little taste that it does have, is that halachically significant or is that not halachically significant? Does the halacha view it as significant taste and it's tam or no? The halacha basically says it's not meat, it's not basar, it doesn't really have enough taste to make any kind of threshold. Now remember, how does this affect us regarding the consumption of the Gidon Asha? Regarding the consumption of the Gidon Asha itself, it's not going to affect us one bit. In other words, the eating of the Gidon Asha is asur, period. And whether it has taste or whether it does not have taste, it's an iser to eat it because the Torah says it's aser to eat it. In fact, if you remember, one of the lines that we had earlier in this perek is that it's eitz ba'alma. We could view it like a piece of wood and still hatar mechayva. The Torah says that one would be chay for eating it. So over here we have now amongst the Tanaim already, the Tanaim are arguing whether or not it has taste or it does not have taste. Why is that important for us? Because of our subject, meaning we're talking about taking the Gidon Asha and cooking it with the thigh. If there is no taste in the Gidon Asha, so even though eating the Gidon Asha is going to be aser, but it's no taste that's imparted into the rest of the food. So if you hold Ein Begidim but no Sein Tam, so that means now that the Yerech is going to be totally mutter. Masha Ein Kein, our Mishnah clearly doesn't hold that way. Because our Mishnah holds that when you take the Gidon Asha and cook it together with the Yerech, so the Yerech is going to be imparted with the taste. So our Mishnah is not holding like this opinion of Ein Begidim and No Sein Tam. And the Gemara tells a couple of incidents. Sahu Dasal Kamed to Rabbi Chanina, Hava Yasav Rabbi Yehuda Barzvina Abava. So someone went to Rabbi Chanina with a shayla. And the shayla was very simple. In other words, something was cooked with the Gidon Asha. And so someone came in and asked him the shayla and walked out. Now outside the door, it happened to have been Rabbi Yehuda Barzvina was right there at the door. Kinafik Amalei Mai Amarlach. So Rav Yehuda Bar Zvina wanted to know, what did the Rav say? And so he asked him, what did the Rav say? And he says, Amalei Sharya Niyalei. So, well, I forgot to remove the Gidon Asha before I cooked it together with the thigh. And I cooked the thigh, and he said, it's mutter, you're allowed to eat the thigh. In other words, he held Ein Begidim and No Sein Tam. Amalei Hadar Ayla Lekameh. So Rav Yehuda Bar Zvina, who was at the door, says, you know what, go back inside, get a second opinion. Get a second opinion from the same person. Okay, that's some accomplishment. So Amar, so now it's not really clear what, meaning the Amara inside the house was Rabbi Chanina. It's not really clear what Rabbi Chanina was expected to say the second time around, meaning he paskin the first time around. He knew what the Shaila was. He knew how he paskin. Anyway, so Amar man hai de kamitzarli. So Rabbi Chanina recognized right away when this person came into his house for a second time to repeat the same question, he knows that he was sent back inside. So he says, look, whoever at the doorway over there, and I have a good feeling that he knew, whoever was at the doorway over here, I want you to tell him the following. Zil emalei lamandi asif abava ein begidim eno sein tam. He says, look, the psak is ein begidim eno sein tam. As far as I'm concerned, I said the halacha correctly. I stand by that. Let's move on. So again, the Gemara tells another story regarding a question that was sent to Rav Yitzchak ben Chalov, who was Mora Heter, he was Mekel. He followed like the opinion of Rav Yeshua ben Levi, who was Mekel. And Vilei lo Sfirle, but he himself didn't hold like that. V'hilchus ein begin b'no sein tam. And the Gemara has a very clear conclusion, which is, ein begin b'no sein tam. It's a good observation. Right, Rabbi Zimmerman points out that the Mishnah now is being recorded, Aliba de lo kehilchasa, meaning that's not the accepted halacha as per the Gemara's conclusion. And why would Rabbi Yehuda Nasi do that? It's a good question, and I don't have a response. One last point before we move on, the last Rashi, second to last Rashi on the Amud, Vehilchasa in begin b'no sein tam, Ubein nizbashel, Ubein nimlach, Ubein nitzla, mashlicha umutter. So it doesn't matter whether it was cooked, salted, or roasted, meaning if I prepare the thigh of the animal with the Gidon Asha inside, now you still should remove the Gidon Asha first, but if you don't, so it's going to be mutter. Rashi says, v'dafka bo. But that's only talking about the Gidon Asha itself. Aval shmeino, yesh bo b'no sein tam. V'imlo nato shmeino os oser. So Rashi writes over here, but as far as the Shmeino Shalgid, so that does have Tom. That is also, remember, we discussed this already numerous times in our Perek, that Yisrael Kedoshim Hain, the Jewish people are holy people. And not only do they not eat the Gid Anashim, which is Asim in the Torah, but they also refrain from eating the Shmeino Shalgid, the surrounding fat that's around the Gid Anashim. And so even though Ain Begidim and no Saint Tom, the Shaman that surrounds it, does in fact have taste. And so that has to, that does have to be taken into consideration. Okay. Let's continue now in the Gemara. The Gemara now is going back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah talked about the Gidim Nasha that was cooked into a pot. And what happens is that there were other Gidim in the pot. And the problem in the Mishnah was, is I could not discern and differentiate the Gidim Nasha and the other Gidim. And so what the Mishnah taught us is, we're going to have to now say that all the Gidim are going to be Aser. And the Gemara is going to ask a very good and succinct question. V'libata beruba. The Gemara's question is as follows. I don't understand. We have the principles of Rov. Meaning, in this pot now of the Gidin, so leave the stew out of the discussion, although later we're going to bring the stew back into the discussion, the soup and all the other things that are in the pot. Let's just right now focus on the various nerves that are in the pot, right? All the sinews that are in the pot, right? Gidin. And right now the Gidin Asha fell in, and I don't know where it is. And it's mixed in with the others, and I can't discern one over the other. So we have a rule. Bittel Barov, meaning this is now a question of foods getting mixed together, and we're not talking even about the imparting of taste. Meaning, let's assume the Gidim Asher doesn't have taste. But in other words, I have so many other Gidim in the pot that are mutter, so and I only need two more in the pot that are mutter, and we have the concept of Bittel Barov. And why don't we say Bittel Barov? So again, I foreshadow this question, and the Gemara's answer, just a succinct, two-word answer, Bir Yashani. So the Gemara's answer, as we turn to the top of Kuf Amud Aleph, is that the Gidim Asher has the status of a birya. As such, it blocks bittel. Birya is a bittel blocker. Now, you'll remember that we discussed Gidim Asher and birya earlier. That was in terms of the shear. How much Gidim Asher do I have to eat in order to be subject to malchus? So normally, by Yisuri Achili, I have to eat a kezias. Birya dictates that because the Gidim Asher is a birya, so I don't have to eat it. I don't have to eat a kezias. I can even eat less than a kezias as long as I'm eating an entire section of Gidim Asher. So you're going to be subject to malchus. Now we're learning another rule regarding birya. Not only is it going to affect the halach of shear, it's also going to affect the halach of bittel. Meaning, once the Gidim Asher has the status of a birya, so therefore it's not going to be subject to bittel. It's going to block bittel. Continues v'chei chaticha shel nevela. Same thing told us the Mishnah. If I have a piece of nevela meat falling into the pot where there were other pieces of kosher meat, so once again, if I can't differentiate which one's the nevela meat and which one the kosher meat, so the Mishnah says it's all going to be aser. All the meats are going to be aser. And once again, the Gemara now asks a really fundamental question, v'tibata beruba. I don't understand. If there are two pieces of kosher meat against one piece of non-kosher meat, so we have now Bittel Berov, what's going on over here? Now, the Gemara over here is going to be basically discussing two other concepts that are going to be blocking Bittel. The first concept that's going to come up right now in the Gemara that's blocking Bittel is what's called a Davish B'minyan. If something is normally sold by count, right? Eggs. Best example, right? You go to the store, you buy eggs, you buy it by count, right? That's how eggs are sold. So that means to say now that an egg is a Davish B'minyan. It's sold almost exclusively nowadays by count. Now, the question of whether or not, right, do the societal norms of whether or not things are sold by count or not by count, and if the norms change, does the halacha of Davish B'minyan change? I'm inclined to say it would, meaning it would basically, whatever the societal norm is of what is normally sold by count, but regardless, in other words, it's the concept, it's the idea of Davish B'minyan. Now, Davish B'minyan, does it always exclusively have to be sold by count? Or is it good enough if it's generally sold by count? And what we're going to about to learn is that's subject to a machlokas. So now, and we're talking about a chaticha, a nice piece of meat. So when you go to the butcher and you're buying a piece of meat, so is it sold by count? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Right? Sometimes you say, I'll take three pieces. Or sometimes you'll just simply say, look, do me a favor. Give me a good amount. Give me a package. So it's not always sold by count. So is something that's not always sold by count, but generally is, does that fall under the category of Davish B'minyan? And you guessed correctly, It's machlokas. So the Gemara says, Hanich leman damar kol shadarko limanu shaninu. So if you learn kol shadarko limanu shaninu. Now, what that means is as follows. It's a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in Arla, Rashi quotes, the third parak of Arla. Right, second day in a row that we're quoting Mishnah from Arla. So it's a Mishnah in Arla that presents to us this idea of Davar Shebeminyan. In terms of how to read the Mishnah in Arla, there are two girsos amongst the Amoraim. One group of Amoraim have it as Kol Shadarko Limanos. As long as it's generally counted, so that's the Davar Shebeminyan, and not subject to Bittul. So, Hanich Laman Damar Kol Shadarko Limanos Shaninu, El Laman Damar Et Shadarko Limanos Shaninu, Ma'ikal Amemar. But there's another girso in the Mishnah in Arla that it's not Kol Shadarko Limanos, but rather Es Shadarko Limanos. Which means that something is only a Davar Shebeminyan only when it's always sold by count. And so that means to say that pieces of meat, because they're not always sold by count, does not qualify as a Davar Shebeminyan. And if that's true, so then, again, we're back to our original question. Why don't we say Bittul? So Shani Chaticha Ho Veru Idlis Kabeid Balifnei Orchim. So the Gemara says, because now we're being introduced to our third concept of the day, of that which blocks Bittul, and that is a Chaticha Ru Idlis Kabeid. If the meat is cut in a piece that's presentable to others, so because now it's in a presentable state, so this is now a davar chashuv, it's significant, and therefore that is going to block bittul. So that means to say that if the piece of meat is cut up into small pieces, and so that's now that's open to bittul. And if the pieces are really large and not presentable, that too, interestingly enough, is going to be subject to bittul. But when the piece is cut to a presentable state, so this is a chaticha ruli's kabeid, and so therefore it is not going to be open to bittul. So our third concept of the day is something which is not subject to bittul. Utsricha, now the Gemara points out that both of these are necessary. And the Gemara says, and look at all these concepts that we're learning in our Mishnah. We're learning the concept of gid, which is really the concept of birya, which blocks bittul. But if the Mishnah only had that, I wouldn't have known about chaticha. Ava chaticha emalo v'yesh min chaticha hol v'ruliz kabed balifnei orchim. Ava gid emalo. And if I only had the concept of chaticha ruliz kabed, I wouldn't have known about the concept of birya. So the Gemara says, therefore, all these cases are necessary to have been taught in the Mishnah, various ideas of bittul blockers, both the birya and chaticha ruliz kabed. And also, by the way, as a bonus, we also learned davar shebeminyan. But within Davar Shebeminyan, we also learn some machlokas, whether it always has to be sold by count, or does it generally have to be sold by count. So the Gemara doesn't want to introduce that over here, because we don't necessarily side with the position that if it's generally sold by count, it's a Davar Shebeminyan.
Where do we learn that this Yiranashi is a birya? I mean, it's part of a whole.
Right.
Why is that a birya?
Right. It begs the definition of birya. What is birya? Right, Danny, that's what you're asking. So I sent you a couple days ago where the birya question came up earlier as well. The birya idea came up as well. And I sent you earlier to a Tosfos where Tosfos tries to give some sort of parameters and definitions in terms of what exactly is a birya. And Sadi Vavam and Aleph. So Tosfos over here does entertain some sort of parameters and definitions in terms of what exactly are the parameters of a birya. So it's not clear. Let's put it this way. It's not perfectly clear amongst the Rishonim exactly what is the criteria. Meaning we work backwards. We know that a ginasha is a birya. That the Gemara says very clearly. Now with that and with other examples, that's why I point you to Tosos earlier on Sadi Vav. That together with a number of other Gemaras, so basically we're going to try to put together, Rishonim, try to put together the rules of what exactly is the definition of a birya. Okay. Kuf Amud Aleph, we're halfway down the Amud, it's a short Amud. Darush Rabbah Babarchana Chaticha Shanavela V'shal Dag Tamei Eino Oseres Ashi Titein Tam Berotev V'Vikipa U'V'Chatichos. So, the Gemara starts off with a statement by Rabbah Barachana, and that's as follows. Let's say I have a piece of Nevela or of non-kosher fish that goes into a pot. Okay. And now what? So now, let's just imagine as the piece of non-kosher meat falls into the pot, so what's going to happen is that obviously that non-kosher piece of meat is nevela. You're not allowed to eat it. That part we understand. That's the starting point. Now, as it goes into the pot, what's going to happen now is that, let's assume the pot's cooking, and there's heat in the pot. So now I have the two necessary ingredients for plata, for a discharge of the taste. I have heat and I have a medium. It's in a liquid. So now as that meat goes into the pot now, so the taste of the nevela is now going to expel into the pot, discharge into the pot. And so now what we have is a classic scenario of tarovis, of issa v'heter, as the discharge is going out into the pot. Now, in terms of combating the taste, so as we already discussed earlier, we have to assume that whatever the full volume of that piece of meat was, that's the amount of discharge that goes into the pot. And what we're learning right now together is the following. And that is that everything in the pot is at arms to fight and negate the taste. So, rotev, kippah, chatichos, meaning everything, all the contents of the pot are there to fight the taste. And if I have, and we discussed earlier, right, maybe even the pot as well, the Gemara had two pages of discussing that. And so if I have now 60 times volume of the contents in the pot against the nevela, so we just negated the taste. So far, so good. Everything is basically as we already presented it once before. Here's where it gets interesting. Okay, Rav Amora, I love Adarish. Now, Rav set up an Amora. Remember the Amora, the human microphone? Basically, Rav had an important insertion, an important addition, an addendum to the point, and that's the following. So now the Gemara says like this. Rav, now let's assume for the purposes of this discussion that Rav subscribes to the principle of Rav Yehuda that min b'mino in a batal. Let's go like that. Assuming that he holds like Rav Yehuda, min b'mino in a batal, so let's now consider. This piece of nevela goes into the pot. It has another piece of meat right next to it, adjacent to it. What's going to now happen is that the chatichas nevela, resting right alongside a piece of meat, a kosher piece of meat right next to it, is going to infuse taste into the piece adjacent to it. Rashi, I'm reading the Rashi, Kevishanasna tam bechaticha, acha shahaisa betzida tamid, ocean is basha tchila ima konem, shitein shara chatichas bekedera, velo haya bezeh shishim beisr, v'nasna nevela tamba. If we have a situation in which the two pieces of meat get cooked together, the nevela and the kosher meat get cooked together, prior to there being shishim, v'achar kach nasan shar chatichos bekedera, and then afterwards you're going to throw in a whole bunch of other pieces of meat. So now what happens? What happens is a principle in halacha known as, now the acronym, it's much easier to say the acronym than to say the entire phrase, it's what's called chanan. Chanan stands for chaticha nasa nevela. In fact, the Gemara here spells it out. I'm going back to the Gemara, I'm rereading. So that second piece now becomes a nevela. And it asers all the other pieces.
What's the
concept? Just give me a moment. Because it's the same type. Now again, let's assume that he's holding like Rabbi Yehuda. Let's assume that min b'mino ino bato. And so now, we have a scenario in which that first piece of meat. Now when I say the first piece of meat, I'm not talking about the nevela piece. Nevela piece obviously is what's creating the Isser. It is Usser, and therefore creating the Isser. But that first piece of meat now that was infused with the taste of the Nevela, it itself becomes a Nevela. That's the idea of Chaticha Nasa Nevela. And as a result of that, so now when I throw in all the other pieces, so now all the other pieces are going to be Usser. Why? Because Min Bimino Inobato. Now there's one obvious question that probably everyone here is wondering. Why do I need that second piece? If I have the nevela piece in there, so the nevela piece in there is already creating the problem. So why do I need that second piece? So I'm hoping you're wondering about that, because that's an obvious question. Yeah, Ben?
My question is that between the two pieces of meat that are in the pot together, what's the conduit between them to make one meat?
Let's say there's a liquid medium. Without a liquid medium, there's nothing to talk about. Let's say there's a liquid medium. But right now, currently, we just have these two pieces in the pot, there's no shishim. So therefore, we weren't mevatel the taste. So now the second piece now becomes asr. And not only does the second piece become asr, it becomes a chaticha nevela. It itself becomes a nevela. So amalei Rav Safra labai michti, Rav keman amalei shmaitik Rabbi Yehuda damrei min b'mino labato. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're holding like Rabbi Yehuda. Now I mentioned earlier, let's assume that. Okay, we don't have to assume it anymore. The Gemara spells it out. We're holding like Rabbi Yehuda. Good. My irya kinasan tam. Afilu kilonasam tam nami. So I don't understand. What do we? Why are you being so fancy over here in your presentation of this halacha? The Neveilim imparted taste into that first piece of meat, and there wasn't enough to negate the taste. So that first piece of meat, now infused with the taste of the Neveilah, becomes Neveilah itself, and Chaticha Nasa Neveilah. Oh, good. So now we're being so fancy in the way we're describing how the second piece of meat now becomes a Chefzo Shel Isser. Okay, but I have the Neveilah piece right here. The Neveilah piece is right here, and we're holding Min Bimino in a bottle. And the Neveilah piece, together with all the other pieces, are Min Bimino. So we don't. Before you got fancy, just that piece of Neveilah by itself already creates the problem of Min Bimino in a bottle. So the Gemara now is going to be giving two answers to this question. Okay, so answer number one of the Gemara is very simple. And that is as follows. Again, the sequence of events is as follows. I have a Neveilah piece and I have a kosher piece and they were cooked in the pot together. And at this point in time, there wasn't enough to be Mevatel Tam. We weren't able to negate the taste. There simply wasn't enough in the pot to negate the taste. So now the second piece of meat that was cooked with the Neveilah is infused with the taste, and Hanan tells us that it becomes Aser. Now, step two. Step two is we took the Neveilah and we actually removed it from the pot. Step three, we're now going to throw in a whole bunch of other pieces of kosher meat. Aye, but because now that remaining piece of meat from the original cooking is now Hanan, it's Chaticha Nasa Neveilah, so it's not that we're saying that it was just simply infused with the taste. We're saying that it itself becomes a Neveilah, and so consequently, subsequently, all the other pieces in there now are mixed in with this piece. Because we're subscribing to the rule of Rabbi Yehuda, Min Bimino in Obato, all the pieces of meat are going to be Aser. Okay, so that's the case in which we're talking about Kadam Vesilko. That's answer number one of the Gemara. Rava Amar, Afilu Tema, as we turn to the Amud Beis, Afilu Tema Lo Kidam Vesilko, Havi Min Umino V'davar Acher. You know what? We didn't have to remove the Neveilah. We could leave the Neveilah in there, and still, here comes the Chiddush. This is what's called Min Umino V'davar Acher. Rashi, Min V'davar Acher, Kagon, Tavlan V'rotev, Mino Deheter Eino Mevatlo Le'Isser, V'lo Musifa Ela Salkeo K'misha Eino B'kedei Rezu. V'nishara HaNeveilah V'harotev, U'batla Neveilah B'rotev V'vikipa. Hilkach nithna tamri shona tchila ba'od shelo rabba harotev alava acha kach naim nathan maim v'kipa v'chatichas nitosfa chaticha rishona shel nevela v'oser sakol mimnei sheimina. Look, as Rashi says like this. When I have a tarovus, when I have a mixture, so let's say our nevela goes into the pot. If when the nevela goes into the pot, I have mino and eno mino. I have other pieces of meat and I've got a bunch of other things, sauce, soup, spices, vegetables, right? Everything that's eno mino. So now at this point in time, so if you're Rabbi Yehuda, so you have actually a real interesting dilemma. Because if I'm able to just simply isolate the meat and the other pieces of meat, we have a situation of no bittul. If I'm able to isolate the eno mino against the nevela meat that falls in there, we have a situation of bittul. So now, if you're Rebbe Yehuda, and the Neveilah meat falls into the pot, and we have both min and eno mino. So what happens according to Rebbe Yehuda? Do we look at the min combination, or do we look at the eno min combination? So, right, it's a really wonderful question if you're Rebbe Yehuda. And the answer is, the Gemara here gives us a rule. They have a minu minu v'davar acher v'chol minu minu v'davar acher silek es aminu k'misha eino. So what we're able to do is basically ignore the min and v'sheino minu rabba alava mevatlo. And the eino min is now going to come along and it's going to be mevatalit. So under normal circumstances for a Yehuda, when I have a tarovis of both min and eino mino, so you're able to ignore the min and allow for bittul. Now again, if you don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda, so then it's not an exciting question, because if you don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda, everything is eligible to be mevatel that piece of Neveilah. But if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, this becomes now a really exciting question. I have min, which is not subject to bittul. I have eno min, which is subject to bittul. And what do we do? So the rule is that we are able to ignore the min, look at the eno mino, and allow for bittul. But as Rashi just got done saying. But if, let's say, we have a scenario in which when we originally put the meat, the nevela meat in the pot, it didn't have enough eino mino to be mevatalet. And so now we have to look at the min combination. And in the min combination, according to Rav Yehuda, there's no bittel. And furthermore, we're also saying chanan, that those other pieces of meat now actually become nevela themselves. So then when I introduce the eino mino ingredients, all the extra liquid and the vegetables and everything else, at this point in time now it's too late. Because once the min, once it wasn't bittel originally, and once the mino, the other pieces of meat now, were left in the pot, isolated with the nevela meat, and they become now chefzo shel iser, so now at that point in time, the whole pot now is going to become aser. Okay.
You cannot double it? The amount of
I mean, you're not allowed to mevatel iser lechatchila. No.
You're doing it anyways, the first time.
Well, the first time we're assuming it happened. Okay. Ad Khan, that takes us through a number of basic principles, and we were introduced today to the world of Chanan. Introduced today to the world of Chanan, I'll tell you what we didn't do today, which is really a basic discussion. If you look back on the Amud Aleph, if you see a number of very long Tosafim, the bottom Tosafos over here has a really, really fundamental debate between the Rishonim, whether or not the Chanan principle is by Basar B'Chalav, or the Chanan principle is by Shar Yisurim. Now, it's a funny machlokas, because the Gemara, as we just saw it and was just presented to us, sounds pretty clear that the Chanan principle is even by Shari Surim. But anyway, the Tosus on the bottom Tosus on Kuf Amud Aleph, going into the Amud Beis, so has a very lengthy discussion, debate amongst the Rishonim, whether we say Chanan by Shari Surim, even though our Gemara, it sounds pretty clear. Okay. We are starting the Mishnah on Kuf Amud Beis, the Ginnan Asha. Ginnan Asha is an Isser in the Torah that applies to kosher animals. What about non-kosher animals? Right. Does or does not? Okay, so, it's machlok. It's machlok amongst the Tanayim. Nog b'Torah v'eino nog b'Tameh, according to the Tanakam, the Isser Ginnan Asha only applies to a kosher animal, but the Ginnan Asha Isser does not apply to a non-kosher animal. Let's think this through. Right, and the exercise I'm about to do right now is really Rashi. So, I'm saying over Rashi. Let's try to figure this out by a non-kosher animal. So that means to say as follows: I'm eating the gidanush of a non-kosher animal. Now, first and foremost, the animal itself is not kosher. Okay, so I can't eat any of the meat of the non-kosher animal. That's a given. What happens when I do eat the gidanush of a non-kosher animal? Am I violating any Isser in the Torah? Well, according to the Tanakhama, the Ginnan Asha Isser does not apply to a non-kosher animal. So you're not going to get Malkus for Ginnan Asha. How about for the fact that it's a non-kosher animal? Good. So Rashi points out over here, that's actually going to depend on the Machlokus that we started off our morning with. Meaning, is there taste in the Ginnan Asha, or there's no taste in the Ginnan Asha? If there's taste in the Ginnan Asha, so then, for eating the ginnush of a non-kosher animal, according to the Tanakhama, you're going to get malchus. Assuming you did so bemazed, with witnesses and a warning, you're going to get malchus. Why? Because you ate behema tamea. Because you ate the, and I'm going to put this in quotes now, the meat of the behema tamea. Ah. But if you hold ain beginim beno saint tam, and now you're eating the ginnush of a non-kosher animal, so are you going to get malchus? And the answer is no. In other words, because according to the Tanakhama, the Isser Ginnan Asha doesn't apply to a non-kosher animal. And if you subscribe to Ein Beginim Beno Sein Tam, so what are you biting into? Basically a piece of wood. So you're not going to be subject to the Ginnan Asha prohibition, and you're not going to be subject to the Behemah Tameah prohibition. Okay. That's Rashi on the Tanakhama. Continuing in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Af B'Tameah. Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, very interesting. The Isser of Ginnan Asha applies to kosher and non-kosher animals. I'm Rav Yehuda Valo Mimnei Yaakov Neser Ginnan Asha V'Adayim Behemah Tameah Muteres Lahen. And the argument of Rav Yehuda goes like this. When was the Isser of Ginnan Asha presented? To the Bnei Yaakov. Before Mamad Har Sinai. What animals were the Bnei Yaakov prohibited from eating?
None.
Bnei Yaakov were allowed to eat all animals. The idea of kashrus, the concept of kashrus, does not come until, you know, 400 years later, right? less than 400 years, but you understand. Hundreds of years later. So the Gita Nashi Yisra is presented to the Bnei Yaakov when there was no segregation of kosher and non-kosher animals. So that means that the Gita Nashi Yisra is presented and it goes across the board to both kosher and non-kosher animals. Amru lo b'sinai namar. Ela shenichtav bimkamo. And the Chachamim say back to Rabbi Huda, no, you're mistaken. Meaning, you think that the Gita Nashi Yisra was presented to the Bnei Yaakov? It wasn't presented to the Bnei Yaakov. It's placed in the Chumash by Moshe Rabbeinu by that the incident of Yaakov and the Malach. But in terms of when it was actually given to us as a mitzvah, that of course is only by Mamad Har Sinai. So the Chachamim say to Rabbi Huda that it was not given to Bnei Yaakov. Yeah, question?
The segregation that didn't happen at the time of Noah when it took 7 pairs and still one?
Right.
Of the kosher animals?
Right. In other words, there was an idea. People knew
that these are kosher animals.
These are kosher animals, these are non-kosher animals. But in terms of, there was no Isser, meaning Bnei Noach have no Isser of kosher, non-kosher. That was for the Mizbeach.
For the Mizbeach.
Yeah. But there was an indication.
Okay. Now, from this point going forward, let's first things first. Let's go through the Gemara. And let's just cover to the bottom of the Amud, and if time permits, so I'll read a little bit of the Rambam over here in his Perusha Mishnayos. Really fundamental Rambam. But anyway, let's first start off with the Gemara. Sav Rav Yehuda Isser Chalal Isser V'Atanya. The Gemara says that interesting. Rav Yehuda holds Isser Chalal Isser, meaning right now Rav Yehuda is entertaining the idea that if I eat the Gita Nashi of a non kosher animal, so you're going to get Malkus, and you're going to get Malkus. Meaning it's already also because of Behemoth Tamea, and on top of that, you're also going to get Amalkus for Gita Nashi. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Now, if I were to eat the carcass of a non-kosher bird, so I have a mina, that you're going to be subject to Tumas Nivlas Of Tahor. Now, it's funny the way I said it, because Nivlas Of Tahor, by definition, is the carcass of a kosher bird. But the Havamina is that the same thing would be true if I ate the carcass of a non-kosher bird. Tama lomar, nevela trefa lo yochal, le tama ba, mishi isur mishum bal tochal nevela, yatsazu shein isur mishum bal tochal nevela, ele mishum bal tochal temeya. Do you know why the tumas nivlas of tahor doesn't apply to a non-kosher bird? Because we only are subject to becoming tame for ingesting a bird that is even eligible to become a nevela. You see, a non-kosher bird can never become a nevela. If a non-kosher bird dies without a shechita, do you know what it is? It's a non-kosher bird. It's a of tamea. And the iser of nevela cannot superimpose on top of that. Why? Because of the principle of ein iser chalal iser. And so the only birds that's going to make a person tamei through ingestion is only going to be kosher birds. And it's based on the principle of Ein Isser Chalal Isser. And so over here, Rabbi Yehuda says that the Isser of Gita Nashi applies to a non-kosher animal. How? The non-kosher animal is already Isser. And now we're going to superimpose another Isser on top of that. V'chite makas avrein begin menos ein tam. Uvitzmei nami Isser gid ika Isser tumaleka. And the Gemara says, well, maybe I get it. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda holds that there's no taste of the Gita Nashi. So therefore, the Isser of Behema Tamea doesn't apply to the Gid because it's Eitz Ba'alma. And that's how Rabbi Yehuda can entertain the idea that the Gid Anasha Isser applies to a non-kosher animal. V'sav Rabbi Yehuda, Eim Gid Manos Eintam V'atayim, the Gemara says, but that's not true. Ha'ochel Gid Anasha Shal Behema Tamea Rabbi Yehuda Mechayiv Shtayim, Rabbi Shimon Poter. Rabbi Yehuda says that you're subject to two sets of malchus when you eat the Gid Anasha of a non-kosher animal. One, for eating non-kosher animal. Two, for eating the Gid Anasha. So clearly he subscribes to the idea that Yesh Begim Manos Eintam. Otherwise, you're not going to be subject to the iser of eating non-kosher animal if you're taking a bite of a tasteless Gita Nashi. So clearly he holds the Yesh Begim Manos Ein Tam. So La'olam Kasav Yesh Begim Manos Ein Tam V'Kasav Noeg B'Shlo. So the Gemara now wants to suggest as follows. Rav Yehuda holds that the Git has Tam. Rav Yehuda also holds that there is an iser of Gita Nashi by a non-kosher animal. How can you say that when we have also already established that according to Rav Yehuda, Ein Iser Chalal Iser? So the Gemara now is going to argue bas achas. The two isurim are coming simultaneously. The isur give isur tuma bahadi adadika asi. And so that means to say that we have to make the argument that when does the Isser Gid Anasha apply? Already in utero. As the fetus inside of its mother is developing, the Isser Gid already applies. The Gemara says, now wait one second. That's also subject to a machlokas. We stated clearly earlier in the Masechta that the Isser Gid Anasha does not apply to the fetus according to Rebbe Yehuda. And so therefore we're in an impasse. So hani mili gabi tahara derechman amar kol bebe matochelu. Kol bebe matochelu val tamea noheg. So the Gemara now tries to make the following distinction. You know when Rebbe Yehuda says that the Isser Gid Anasha does not apply to a fetus, that's talking about the fetus in a kosher animal. Why? Based on what we said earlier in the Masechta, we said that when you shech the mother, all the contents inside are going to be mutter, including the fetus inside. Again, we're not holding like Reb Meir right now. We're going like Reb Yehuda. And so that means to say that the fetus inside of a kosher animal is viewed not as an independent entity, but just simply as an appendage to the mother. And so therefore, the fetus of a kosher animal, so the Gid Anasha is going to be mutter because it's not an independent status. However, when we're talking about a non-kosher animal, so now there's no shechita of a non-kosher animal. So therefore, the fetus inside is not just considered an appendage of its mother. And so therefore, the Gid Anasha that's growing inside of a fetus of a non-kosher animal does, in fact, have the status of Gid Anasha. And so what the Gemara now is arguing is that's why, according to Rav Yehuda, you can have a Behema Tameya with both the Isser of Behema Tameya and the Isser of Gid Anasha, because they're coming at the same time, they're developing at the same time. Now, if you remember the Gemara earlier, so we have another question that we're going to ask. The Gemara here reminds us of the Mishnah Nazir. The Mishnah Nazir tells us, if a Nazir comes into contact with the following, he is now going to have to shave and restart and reboot his Nazirus. Al HaMes, if he comes into contact with human remains, Val Kizayis Men HaMes, or even if it's just a section of human remains, he is going to have to start again. V'kashalan, we asked such an easy question on that Mishnah Nazir. I don't understand. Al Kizayis Men HaMes, Megalech Al HaMes Kula Lo Kol Shekein. Once you're telling me that if he comes into contact with just Kizayis of human remains, he is now Tamei Mes and going to have to start again his Nazirus. So you don't think that if he comes into contact with a full mace, the same thing is going to occur? So when the Mishnah over there was talking about the full mace, it wasn't talking about that of a developed human being, but we were talking about the remains of a nephil. So you had a miscarriage, rachmanus, and the miscarriage was of a fetus that was so underdeveloped that even the sinews haven't even formed yet. And what we just learned now in Rav Yochanan's understanding of that Mishnah is that in fetal development, the sinews only come at a later point in time. And that means now that and we're assuming that the same thing is true not only in human development, but in the fetal development of animals. So that means to say that when do the Gid develop inside? Only at a subsequent stage of fetal development. That means that the Isser Behema Tamea in utero, it comes first, and the Isser Gid comes later, simply because that is the Chachamim's understanding of fetal development, that the sinews only grow at a later point in time. Alma Isser Tuma Kadim. So the Gemara says, so clearly the Isser of Behema Tamea comes first. And it's not Bevas Achas, and right now we're a little bit stuck. We're a little bit stuck. The Gemara unsticks us. Alpha gav di iser tuma kadim asa iser gid chayel aleha. So the Gemara says, I know that's true, but we're still going to say that the iser gid is going to come and superimpose. Now, why? Why is it going to superimpose? In other words, we've already established that Rabbi Yehuda holds ein iser chal al iser. So that's true, ein iser chal al iser, but there's a number of rule breakers to ein iser chal al iser. One of the rule breakers of ein iser chal al iser is that if that second iser represents a more chamor aspect, so then it's going to apply. Shekein Isura Noeg Bivnei Noach. And the reason why it applies is because the Isur applies to Bnei Noach. Dekanami Diktani Amar Rabbi Yehuda V'alom Bnei Yaakov Neser Gid Anasha V'adayin Behema Tamei Muteres Lahem. In fact, if you go back to the Mishnah, it reads clearly in the Mishnah. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, when was the Isur of Gid Anasha presented? Before Mamad Har Sinai. So it was presented to the Bnei Noach. Now, when we say B'nai Noach over here, what exactly do we mean when we say B'nai Noach? Does it mean that it's applied universally to everybody? Does it mean that it just simply applied to the B'nai Yaakov, but the B'nai Yaakov at that time were called B'nai Noach? We pointed out earlier that we could interpret, not we, but the Rishonim interpret the Gemara in one of two avenues. In any event, the point is still going to be the same basic point, that the Isser Gid Hanasha, according to Rav Yehuda, predates Sinai, and as a result of that, it applies to B'nai Noach, however you want to define B'nai Noach, and so consequently, that means to say that it's an Isser Chamor, it's a more significant Isser, and that's why we can have the idea of Isser Chal al Isser. Okay, I have a minute, so let's just quickly, if I can find it, right, that also is important. Yeah, I found it. Okay, so I have a moment, so let me read a really, really fundamental Rambam. Rambam on our Mishnah. Our Mishnah on Machlok between the Chachamim and Rav Yehuda, whether or not the Isser of Ganesha applied before Sinai. Rav Yehuda says it does, and the Chachamim says it does not. The Rambam, first of all, clearly sides with the Chachamim. That part's clear. The wording of the Rambam is very strong. V'sim libcha ala ikar hagadol hanichla b'mishnah hazos. The Rambam says, I want you to pay careful attention to a very big rule that we just learned together in our Mishnah. Any mitzvah that is binding today is because it was given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu. And it has nothing to do with the fact that it was given to the earlier prophets. Earlier prophets over here means Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right, we don't eat Aver Menachai. Does that have anything to do with the mitzvah B'nai Noach of eating Aver Menachai? The Rambam says no. Elafisha Moshe Asar Alano Aver Menachai. Bameshit Siva Besina She's Kaim Isser Aver Menachai. Yeah, in other words, yes, it's one of the Shev mitzvahs B'nai Noach, but that's not why it's binding to us. It's binding to us because of Mamad Har Sinai. And the mitzvah of Mila, it's very nice that Avram Avinu did that, right? And obviously, right? It set the stage, but that's not why we do the mitzvah. We do the mitzvah because it was Elamim Nesha Kosh Baruch Hu Siva Osano Aide Moshe Rabbeinu Shenimo Kamoshama Avram Avinu Alav Hashalom V'chein Gid Hanasha Einanu Hochim Acher Isser Yaakov Avinu. In other words, even if it was given to Yaakov Avinu, that's not why we do Gid Hanasha. Ela mitzvah Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Hashalom. Halotira Masha Amru Taryag Mitzvos Namrulo La Moshe Misinai V'chol Elo Michlal HaMitzvos. Rambam, very strongly worded Rambam over here in terms of mitzvos are binding because they were given to Moshe and not because of any earlier events.